Hello, everybody. We'll start our program in about 1 minute.
This is going to be the greatest radio show in the history of the world.
It's going to be lit.
I got so much love for our radio program.
Bickley and Murata.
Welcome to the greatest radio show in the history of the universe.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
This is the greatest radio show of all time.
Bickley and Murata.
You're listening to the greatest radio show that has ever existed.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest.
Feel it right now.
The greatest thing ever.
It is.
Dan Bickley.
The greatest ever.
Vince Murata.
You can't get excited about this. You might not be able to be excited.
Bickley and Murata.
Greatest of all time. Legendary.
So that's is awesome. This show.
This is the greatest radio show of all
that's
time.
Right.
Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit.
It's the greatest thing in the world.
Hello, everybody. How are you all doing today? Dan Bickley, Vinny Murata, live at Cardinals Camp. Where another viral exercise is taking place. We never got to our previous viral exercise that we were going to unveil on the air.
Yeah, and that, we never did.
We never did. And that was going to be spot the lie. Yeah. Find the lie. Okay, we never got to that. I've got my list right in front of me. Today, though.
I still haven't made much.
Really?
Yeah. Good thing we're not planning on doing
it
today.
Yeah, good point. Today, the list happens to be, and it's a good one, the top 10 places to drink beer.
Like in the world or just generally?
Look.
Yeah, like cities or like
no,
locations?
No, no, no. For instance, and I saw this Kevin Zimmerman from our staff, shower beers, boat beers, train beers, airport beers, pool beers, beer garden beers, patio beers, first beer after a 12-hour workday, post-long-run beer followed by breakfast beers. That kind of thing.
I can get on board with about 8 of those. I've never had a beer in the shower. Have you?
No. That's that. No, no.
Beer
no.
for breakfast?
No, I'm not down with that.
I guess.
If I would ever have a cocktail in the morning, it's going to be champagne and orange juice, not beer.
That's not true. We both recently had a breakfast beer.
We did?
On the way to Nashville.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. Now, let me scratch that because number one on my list.
Is airport beers?
Airport leaving on vacation beers. That's number one on my list. There's something about that, right? Isn't that worthy of number one?
That's a pretty good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
When you're leaving and you're going someplace cool and you don't have to work when you land, it's a great, great feeling.
I hadn't seen this viral thing
give
pop
it some
up.
Thought. Number two for me would be outdoor concert beers. Number three would be pre-gig beers before my band plays.
Number four would be during gig beers. Number five would be post-gig beers.
Right. Number six would be post-work beers. Number seven, the I'm at home and not having to drive beers.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always very tasty.
Those are good. Those are good.
Put together a list, man.
It might be easier to come up with a list of bad places to drink a beer.
That's a good point. That's a really, really good
doctor's
point.
Office.
Right.
Funeral procession.
Traffic jam.
Gamble's list would be Dublin, Ireland. St. Patrick's Day in Ireland.
There's it. That's
Mardi
the whole list.
Mardi Gras in New Orleans. Places not to have beers. Right?
Yeah, I hadn't seen this.
Take a look. Check it out. It's pretty cool.
Check that out.
It's pretty, pretty cool. Maybe later on I'll just run by my my spot the lies by you. You'll nail it, though. You kind of know me.
I had a really hard time coming up with facts about myself when I tried to do it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What does that say about you?
I am the least interesting man in the world.
I wouldn't say that.
Somebody get me a beer sponsorship.
You're far more interesting than I think people would think you are. I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah,
I do know how to explain it, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, try not to.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I'm just going to leave that hanging.
appreciate that,
somebody
man.
Somebody who's hung with you, I'm going to leave that hanging.
Okay.
All right, let's start the show, Jarrett.
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Here, Beck, have this. We're about to jump into the Splash beer.
Oh, can we do that?
No. The Splash is brought to you by Rooter Ranger Plumbing. Plumbers you can trust for any of your plumbing services. Call 888-7-RANGER to get you out of plumbing danger.
All right, today, day three of the Cardinal OTAs. Day three for us broadcasting live from the Dignity Health Training Center at the Arizona Cardinals facility. Today, we will be joined by more football players.
Yes, we will.
Yes, we are.
Wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson will join us.
That's good.
And offensive lineman Justin Pugh making another appearance on
Dan's
the show.
Dan's favorite, big, sweaty offensive lineman.
I love big, sweaty offensive linemen.
Bic is going to be like in his element because big, sweaty offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Pugh is a very engaging personality, very entertaining guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Chris Melvin of the Arizona Cardinals media relations staff is the biggest fan on planet Earth of Vinny Joe Trivia.
Uh-huh.
So he's set up another match with Justin Pugh. And the topic, right down, right in your wheelhouse, Game of Thrones.
I'm giving you a heads up right now. I think I'm going to end up disappointing you because
we're playing two on one. Like okay. We get to be a team, and I will contribute nothing.
Okay. All right. I'll do my best. It's like when people. It's like I don't have a great catalog of names and places and all that stuff from Game of Thrones.
It's from all those pre-vacation beers.
Uh-huh. Pre-Game of Thrones beers. That's what it is. That's on my list, right?
Yeah. Still no Patrick Peterson at OTAs. Veterans that were gone on Monday on day one of the voluntary OTAs, Larry Fitzgerald, David Johnson, among them on the field yesterday, but mm-hmm. no Patrick Peterson.
Yeah, and that is kind of a sign that everything is still not okay, nor will it be okay. I'm curious exactly what this means going forward, whether there's another trade request in place, exactly what's going on. We'll find out eventually. But yes, we'll be heavily focused, as always, on the Arizona Cardinals, particularly among an ESPN ranking that kind of has them as one of the more intriguing teams of the NFL offseason.
Yes, Mike Sando put together his list with help from anonymous sources around the league, executives and such, and the Cardinals did make that list. We can dive into some of the details of that coming up.
Looking forward to that. All right, item number two, the Phoenix Suns. They made quite a splash yesterday with the unveiling of Monty Williams, who handled the press conference about as well as he could without trying to win the press conference. You know what I mean? It wasn't fire and brimstone. It wasn't a surprise. It was just a guy being himself.
It's a perfect way to put it. Self-deprecating humor. A lot of talk about evolution career-wise and failures, which was really refreshing to hear. Really enjoyed the press conference. Really enjoyed our conversation with Monty Williams as well. And then when Monty Williams tells us, hey, I asked Jerry Colangelo about this, and he endorsed the Suns, and the Suns endorsed Monty Williams to Suns, Monty Williams to the Suns in a conversation with Robert Sarver.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was a good day.
Yeah,
it does it wash away the pain of not getting the number one pick in the draft lottery? Maybe not, but it was a really really good first step in that right direction again.
Yeah, you know what will be, when I know things will be back to whole?
When?
When Robert Sarver announces the statue of Jerry Colangelo going up outside the arena. That's when I know everything is whole.
Maybe that'll be part of the renovation.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right, item number three, the NBA playoffs last night. The Raptors tie up a series. They blow out Milwaukee. Drake has become the worst NBA fan in the game as of right now.
Has become?
Is.
No, he's just running away with the title now.
Oh, man.
I have a complaint about Drake, okay?
Oh, I've got a lot of them.
So, he apparently has the world's largest jersey collection, mm-hmm. and he shows up all of these places, jinxing all these franchises. Yet here he is, this Toronto Raptors super fan, with unfettered access to walk the sideline like he's a member of the damn coaching staff.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't wear one shred of Raptors clothing to any of these games. You notice that?
Yeah, you're right.
He just bugs, man.
He's the worst. He's the most overrated musician. Among the most overrated musicians I've ever heard, and he is a jerk face of a sports fan. I mean, seriously, the trolling of Giannis, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Giannis' reps have had to come out and pretty much admonished Drake for his behavior.
I'm going to be honest with you. His agent or his representative, Giannis's representative, made a real great point. Could you imagine a marquee athlete showing up to a concert, sitting in VIP seats, and just mercilessly trolling the performer? You think the performer would like that?
No.
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 No, 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 no. And that's... There's a difference between being a great sports fan, like Eddie Vedder, who's a great sports fan, and then going there and just making yourself part of the story.
I think, and people bring up the Spike Lee example. I think Spike Lee is a really good fan.
Yeah.
Now, does he cross the line sometimes? Yeah, we've seen it. Everybody remembers the big exchange he had with Reggie Miller in that Pacers playoff series. That was classic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Drake just trying to get under people's skin.
Yeah, that's...
And it's working.
Yeah, he's trying to get under people's skin.
Because here we are talking about him.
He's trying to get under people's skin, and he's also trying to bring as much attention to himself as possible. When I saw him give a shoulder massage to Nick Nurse...
Yeah.
Still one of the greatest names for any NBA coach in history.
Can I make another point on this series? It's tied now 2-2, as the Raptors did win 120-102 last night in Game 4. I believe the Bucks are the better team, but things are getting interesting, and one of the things that I'm really enjoying watching in this series is Eric Bledsoe's struggle.
Oh, you're enjoying that, are you?
I'm really enjoying that. Is that petty of me?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take it. I'm enjoying it. He has not been good in this series at all.
No.
In fact...
No, he hasn't.
He played the third most point guard minutes on the Bucks yesterday. Started, played under 21 minutes, but George Hill and Malcolm Brogdon are both getting more points, or more minutes at the point, because Eric Bledsoe can't shoot the ball.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this, but I do think that a Toronto Golden State NBA final, it doesn't...
Why, because Kawhi is not as exciting a superstar as Giannis? Is that why?
Kind of, because I think Milwaukee is, you're looking at with Giannis, you're looking at the MVP, and it's just the whole Milwaukee thing. And I'm not trying to be, you know, a xenophobe here and hate on a team from a foreign country. But at the same time, Milwaukee versus Golden State, I think, just works better. You don't think so?
I try to guard against judging the quality of a series before it actually happens. I think Toronto and Milwaukee are evenly matched teams, and I think both of them will put up about the same amount of fight against Golden State, especially if Kevin Durant is there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll judge a series after it's over from now on.
Speaking of Kevin Durant, I'm glad you brought him up. There's a lot of stuff swirling around Kevin Durant. The most notable would Mark Stein throwing out there, and Mark does not speculate wildly. Mark is like the opposite of Jason Lockenfora. He said, don't be surprised if Kevin Durant ends up with the Clippers. What if the Knicks get aced out of this whole offseason?
The Knicks and the Lakers.
Yeah. Could you imagine that?
The Clippers seem to be everybody's sexy recent choice of, here's a team to watch. They're moving in the right direction. They actually made some trades at the deadline last year that people said, hey, you're in contention for the playoffs. What are you doing? And they didn't miss a beat. That could be a team to watch, and it could be also in the process of turning Los Angeles into a, dare I say it, Clippers town.
Yeah.
How about that?
I'll believe it when I see it, but everybody...
Clipper Daryl showed up at that Lakers fan rally.
Look, there are too many people I respect saying that the Clippers are going to turn the corner because of the money and because of... The Steve Ballmer guy, who is really just a whack job. Apparently, players like him.
Yeah, it's easy to like a guy who's signing your checks that has $1 trillion.
That's
true.
Yeah, that's a good point. How did he make his money, Steve Ballmer?
Microsoft.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's one of those
little
Microsoft
startup companies.
Yeah, little startup company.
You might have heard of it.
Yeah. That's exactly right. All right, Major League Baseball, the Diamondbacks lost again yesterday. They are looking to avoid the sweep today. And Mike Hazen, visiting with the morning show this morning, says he's as frustrated as fans are with what he's been seeing.
Yeah, I mean, these games are following a pattern. Good starting pitching, one pitch here or there, again for the second straight night, sixth inning home run, Eric Hosmer, two-run shot off Zach Greinke, and there you go. Diamondbacks can't generate any offense. They are in danger of getting swept today in San Diego. And a discussion that we had on the show yesterday was brought up on the morning show with Mike Hazen, and it might have a little bit of teeth to it. We'll get back into that later.
Yasmani Tomas.
A way maybe to kickstart the offense. It's not a done deal and not an impossibility, but it's somewhere in that gray area in between.
All right, I find it kind of ironic that the city of Toronto might get a team into the NBA Finals, yet can't get the Maple Leafs in the Stanley Cup Finals ever, right? The NHL Stanley Cup Finals are set. Yes, they haven't even started yet, folks. The Boston Bruins and the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this rematch since 1970,
yeah,
and finally we have it.
Sure, yeah.
For the win, the blog on USA Today put out a short piece, Why St. Louis Sports Fans Might Hate Boston, and they pointed out the 1970 Stanley Cup Finals, Boston beat St. Louis. 2004 World Series, Boston beat St. Louis. 2013 World Series, Boston defeats St. Louis. Super Bowl, New England over St. Louis. They didn't even mention the three times the Boston Celtics beat the St. Louis Hawks in the NBA Finals from 1957 to 1961. Boston's got everybody's number, but stand in line. If you're waiting for this parade of titles like Boston has, you're going to be waiting a long time. Now, St. Louis has got over on Boston twice. The Hawks beat the Celtics in 58, and the Cardinals beat the Red Sox in 67. But it's been a one-sided city-on-city rivalry.
Okay, so say the Bruins win. Right now, the New England Patriots have the Super Bowl trophy. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Boston Red Sox.
The Boston Red Sox have the World Series trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bruins might have the Stanley Cup trophy.
Yeah. But the Celtics, who advanced to the second round of the playoffs, are the team that everybody... They suck.
They suck.
That was their worst postseason showing in this current cycle of seasons that we're in. It's a different planet altogether. Kudos to them.
It's crazy to me. I mean, it really is. You go back to 19... Whatever it was, the year that the Patriots first won the Super Bowl... And you think about Boston and what Boston was like. And I remember Boston having this image as a sports town where they were never happy about anything. Everything about Boston is fatalistic. You just kind of grumpy because of the climate and the weather and the winters and just...
Yeah.
You're conditioned to believe that life is hard. Brutal. Brutally hard. And now you look at where they're at now in 2019 and the amount of championships they've accumulated. It is just a joke.
Well, have you ever seen the movie Fever Pitch? Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore?
No.
It's about an obsessed Red Sox fan, and they happen to release the movie and film it during the 2004 season.
Oh, that's right.
So they had to change the ending of the movie and all that stuff. But there's scenes in that movie where there's just Red Sox fans commiserating about how miserable they are and they'll never break the curse of the Bambino. That was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's been a citywide lifting of a curse.
Oh, completely.
Not that the Celtics have ever really had a drought.
Man, if we could just get a piece of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How about just two playoff teams at once? Can we do that?
Is that
too much to ask for?
I don't think so.
All right. Those are your topics today, things we are getting into. We are efforting to have Kurt Warner join the show. So, Kurt, if you're listening, please join the show today. We're going to have Cardinal guests, Keyshawn Johnson, Justin Pugh, all that stuff. A lot of good stuff happening today. But the football team is still ruling everything because of the offseason that they have put together. Kyler Murray plus Cliff Kingsbury plus the Patrick Peterson drama plus the David Johnson tweets. You throw it all together, there's a lot happening here.
There is, and I don't think the Cardinals are any different than any other. When you talk about the tweets and maybe individual players being less than satisfied with fill in the blank, whether it's the relationship with the organization, and I think that's still a question, in the Patrick Peterson situation, David Johnson, I don't know if that was directed more towards angry fans or fantasy football owners, but I don't think the Cardinals are any different from any other team in having to deal with that stuff. But David Johnson was back on the field yesterday, mm-hmm. which was a good sign.
Yeah, and the David Johnson thing, it's the smoldering contempt for the new skeptics in his life. I don't know who those people are. I don't know where they are. I don't know what David Johnson is hearing. But that level of contrived motivation, it's just kind of run its course with me, Vinny, personally. I'm just tired of hearing it. You hear it from so many football players every year, and it's rarely a predictor of what they're going to do. So whatever. The bigger story, Patrick Peterson still not here. That would mean to tell you that his absence, unlike the other guys on Monday, wasn't necessarily veterans kind of reconfirming that, look, this is voluntary. You can't make us be here. I don't need to be here. The reps that the wide receivers are getting, Larry Fitzgerald doesn't need to be on the field. Patrick Peterson obviously not being here is a continued function of his unhappiness and his and the dysfunction that exists between the organization and him. So the question becomes, is he going to show up at any point in time?
I don't know.
I don't either.
We had speculated when OTA started and our coverage out here started on Monday. Yeah, probably doesn't make sense on a Monday. You know, a couple of other veterans weren't here. That was the only full media access that was available. Maybe Patrick Peterson is not comfortable further addressing the suspension and answering questions and that whole process. Maybe he'll show up on Tuesday. Well, he didn't show up on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Today is the last day of OTA workouts this week. Then next week, there's 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
3 or 4 days the week after that. The longer this goes on, the more validity that question, is the relationship salvageable, the more validity that has.
I know. And the thing that, and Wolf and I were both in alignment on this, when Patrick Peterson had his red carpet event for his foundation last Thursday night, the way he spoke made me believe it's repairable. Because he sounded very disappointed at how the information got released. Mm-hmm. And like I told you, he suspects the team dropped dime on him, or at least he did. And that to me, that says a lot. You know what I mean? You've been here a long, long time. If you looked at the team, you'd say, why would they do that? There'd be no reason. There'd be no reason whatsoever for them to kind of sabotage my foundation event when they want me to play football for them. It doesn't make any sense. Yet when you're that person and it happens to you and you've known about this for months and then suddenly it happens, I can see why he's ticked. I can see why some paranoia sets in.
Now, do we have any I wasn't out at that event, obviously. I don't think you were out at that event either. I know.
No.
You had friends that were part of that event.
Yeah.
I mean, was it sabotaged or was it just made awkward?
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean,
the event still went off, and I'm sure it was still a success.
Yes. But I think what Patrick Peterson is thinking is that here's a foundation that is trying to raise money to better the school educational experience for young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when this gets dropped, it conceivably affects the amount of philanthropic gestures. People aren't necessarily going to dig deep and donate if the guy who runs the foundation has been compromised. Now, I don't know if that's the case in Patrick Peterson, but I just think that if Patrick Peterson is that distrustful of this organization to believe that they dropped dime on him, this relationship will not be repaired.
Yeah, and we thought maybe we'd be moving towards answers on that. Now the question out there, too, is still if the relationship is damaged, to what extent? And what does it mean for the future? A trade still could be possible. Louis Riddick of ESPN, NFL front office GM, was on with Doug and Wolf today. And they asked the question, if you were an NFL GM, would you be calling Steve Keim?
I would definitely give a call, especially if I was a team that was in need of a guy who can play the kind of, as Deion Sanders used to say back in the day when I played with him in Atlanta, who can play cat covers like Pat Peterson can. Meaning, I got that cat. You other 10 guys just worry about what you need to worry about, and I'll handle this over here. If I needed that guy, and I thought that guy would make a big difference, which, look, he can make a difference for any football team, yeah, I would be calling. If it was something that I felt like would come at a reasonable price, for sure. Patrick Special.
Yeah, also the question that, you know, if that's something that could be in the future, what could the Cardinals get in return? Here's Louis Riddick on that.
What would I want in return?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I would probably want at least, I mean, he's still in his prime. You figure Pat probably has at least four.
Yeah.
At least 4 good years. Three or four good years. I'd want a 2, maybe even a 1.
Yeah, wanting and getting at this point.
Could
you get that last year before the deadline? Probably. Undoubtedly. 6-game suspension obviously affects the value of Patrick Peterson. I don't want that to happen.
Well,
I want them to both sides to be able to move on and patch this up.
I agree. And the Cardinals already said we're not trading him. So, but here's the thing that I don't get, and maybe we can get back into this later. If Patrick Peterson came to the Cardinals and said, "Okay, look, we know that I'm going to get popped here, and we know a suspension is coming. Can you work with me? Can you restructure the deal so I don't get dinged by the NFL?" The Cardinals at that point in time could just say, no, we're not going to do that. You own this. But okay, that's denying a request from a player who wants more money from the team. What does that have to do with snakes in the grass? What does that have to do with, oh, this is how it's going to be? The oversized sense of betrayal Patrick Peterson has shown on social media still doesn't match up with the facts that we think we know in this case. There's still a lot here we don't know.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Definitely. Have you subscribed to the Bickley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Murata podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Coming up next, the Suns had a red letter day yesterday, by all accounts. We'll get into some of the things that went down and the reaction to it next as we broadcast live from the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center here in Tempe, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Giving you exclusive coverage of the Arizona Cardinals organized team activities, the OTAs. Bickley and Murata. Live from Cardinals HQ. Presented by Courtesy Chevrolet. 98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station.
The craziest, you know, most fans would be kind of weirded out a little bit just based on the history. But Mr. Colangelo was the guy that really pushed me to work for Mr. Sarver. And that said a lot, because most people would think that they don't get along. And that's contrary to what the reality is.
As Monty Williams, the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns, he joined us following his press conference yesterday here on Bickley and Murata, and dropped that little nugget that maybe it's not the most accurate of terms, Bick, but Jerry Colangelo, as the day went on, we got more developments on how this whole thing went down. Kind of a matchmaker in this process between Monty Williams and the Phoenix Suns.
It was very surprising to hear. It was very surprising for Monty Williams to volunteer that. It was very heartwarming for a lot of people to hear. But again, like I said, when I listened to Monty Williams describe himself and the things he believed in, Jerry Colangelo is of very much the same mindset. He believes in a lot of the similar things. So I'm not surprised that Jerry Colangelo backs Monty Williams, but to pick up the phone and to tell the Phoenix Suns you should hire this guy, and then also similarly to recommend the Suns to Monty Williams, is interesting to me.
Yeah, so we had Monty Williams on our show, and then in the afternoon with Burns and Gambo, they were able to track down Jerry Colangelo, who gave a really good interview with those guys. And here is Jerry Colangelo answering the question, was Monty Williams the best choice for the Suns?
Well, I don't know what other options they were even considering. I mean, except what I read, you know, in the newspaper. I'm just saying to you, it doesn't matter who else was out there. I think he was a tremendous choice.
And we all, I'm not all of us, but a lot of people felt that way mm-hmm. in this process that Monty Williams' name surfaced first. That was the guy they got. He checked a lot of the boxes of what they were looking for. About that whole matchmaker thing, too, here's Jerry Colangelo talking about another element of that process and the role that he played in it.
I did hear from Robert Sarver. I was in Europe, and I hadn't heard from him in a long time. And he asked me what I cared to share with him about Monty. And I said, he's the whole package. He's the perfect package. And the next day they met, and I got a nice message from Robert saying, thank you. He's our guy. He will, he will be the next coach.
Yeah.
Heartwarming is a great way to hear all of these comments, or a great way to describe them, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. It really, really is.
The Suns, let's go back in history a little bit. It seems like an annual process that they're interviewing and trying to find a head coach. Jerry Colangelo saying, I hadn't heard from Robert Sarver in a long time.
And
this process seemed to go so smoothly. with Jerry Colangelo's help, with Robert Sarver reaching out and seeking the opinion of the guy who owned the team before him, who has experience with this candidate. This seems buttoned up. It seems downright buttoned up, Bick.
A couple things about it. I know early on in Robert Sarver's tenure, after Jerry Colangelo's official time with the organization had come to an end, that there were any number of free agent acquisitions, items, you name it, that Jerry Colangelo could have been a really good resource to the Phoenix Suns, and his phone never rang. And I know it bothered Jerry, and because Jerry, no matter what's gone down between Jerry and Robert, and things got real thick when Brian Colangelo kind of was sent packing from the organization. You can phrase it however you want with semantics, but that's kind of when the relationship got really bad. That's when Jerry picked up the phone, called Robert, and called him a very bad word. Well, he's protecting his son. Anybody would do the same.
Sure.
For Robert Sarver to pick up the phone and call Jerry Colangelo, first of all, is a big step. And because it's just smart. Why wouldn't you take advantage of a resource like that? Why would you let little things like ego and this is my team now, why would that prevent you from tapping into a resource? Well, look at it in real terms. Anybody who is following Jerry Colangelo as owner of the Suns has a tough job. Anybody following Jerry as owner of the Diamondbacks had a tough job. And Jerry is revered now more than ever. I know over the last 4 or 5 years, when he goes out in public, he cannot avoid and get away from people coming up to him saying, man, I wish you were still owning the team. He's been besieged by that to the point where he's thought it's sad. And he's always been there willing to help. It's that servant leader mentality that is very apparent in the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
And Monty Williams subscribes to it, so does Jerry Colangelo. For Robert to reach out to Jerry, that's a big step. And I think all of us, and I know this applies to me too, because I have not spoken to Robert in a long time. I know that when Robert talks to the media, and he's generally done it on this radio station, and that's been the extent of his public exposure in the last 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't come off warm and fuzzy to the media because he's been abused by the media, mostly national, some local, but mostly national. So I think that the Robert Sarver that we've gotten at this radio station, which has been very infrequent and limited, hasn't exactly been the Robert Sarver that we hear about from Larry Fitzgerald. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's like, wait a minute, who are you talking about? Because I don't recognize that guy. The story that Jerry just told kind of lines up with what we've heard about Robert from Larry and kind of speaks to that centralized question you asked yesterday. Can people change?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just look at the change in this process, though.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back a couple of years after Earl Watson took over as the interim, okay? And the Suns didn't even interview anybody else. Earl Watson was no great shakes, by the way, when he took over as the interim head coach. The results weren't there, but there was not even a process. He's our head coach moving forward. Well, how'd that work out for you? He lasted 85 games after he was given the title. Look at the change in the process here from this organization. This was a very focused coaching search that involved outside sources and opinions of others. I think that's a tremendous step in the right direction. And then you throw into the fact that the person that was sought out to give feedback on this candidate was Jerry Colangelo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a 180-degree turn over the way this organization has operated in the recent past. Does it mean wins? No. There's still a lot of work to be done. You still got to get veterans on this roster. You still have a lot of roster holes to fill in. But, man, until we get to that process, I think Suns fans can feel pretty good about what they've seen.
And you know what
so
else?
Far.
I think Dan said this right after the press conference, the first thing. It feels like they have a grown-up as head coach now.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
You really feel that way.
And it's just kind of the way, and I'm not saying that Igor wasn't a grown-up, but he certainly couldn't express himself the way that that we heard from Monty Williams.
Or Earl Watson.
And the thing with Earl Watson, the rhetoric was just so over the top. It was fascinating to listen to, mm-hmm. but there was no real depth to it. It was just rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
This is different. They got a real head basketball coach.
Yeah, I agree with you. Phoenix Convention Center will once again host more than 75 of the Southwest's best craft breweries with over 350 craft beers. We're giving you the chance to win tickets. Just visit the rewards page at arizonasports.com to enter. And for complete details on the Real Wild and Woody Indoor Beer Festival coming on July 27th. Coming up next, D-back struggles with the bat continue. Might there be help on the way from Reno, Nevada? We'll get into that next. Bickley and Murata live from the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Giving you exclusive coverage of the Arizona Cardinals organized team activities, the OTAs. Bickley and Murata, live from Cardinals HQ. Presented by Courtesy Chevrolet, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
It's Bickley and Murata, coming to you live from the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center in Tempe. Day three of week one of voluntary OTAs. Today we'll be joined by rookie wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson and offensive lineman Justin Pugh. Those interviews usually start at 12:45. We'll have a lot of Cardinals coverage for you coming up. The question came up about you shared that list that's going viral on where the best place to have a beer is.
Yeah.
Jarrett put it out on Twitter at Bickley_Murata. You know who answered the question?
Who?
Former Cardinal offensive lineman Earl Watford.
Did he really?
He said, any comforting place where you can unwind after a long day with an ice-cold brew. I like that attitude, Earl. I like it.
You think he meant comfortable place?
We're comforting. Probably comfortable, but yeah.
Either one. Either one works for me, right?
It's comforting to be comfortable.
Yeah. So, yeah, my list, I like my list so far. The airport leaving on vacation beers, pre-gig beers, in-gig beers, the post-gig beers not so much, because the worst thing about having a band is that unless you're really good, you don't have roadies. So the carrying your own equipment, it's not fun, man.
That's why you have kids. That's why you have kids, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like my kids pick up a finger to help us out. But that's my issue, not yours, Jarrett. So, yeah, I think you should put together a list, Vinny.
I will.
Okay.
Good. I will.
Good.
So, yesterday, we had the discussion about what Yasmani Tomas has been doing down at Reno. He had four home runs in one game. He's generally hitting the ball well. And I don't think offense has really ever been the problem with Yasmani Tomas. The problem is, A, the contract, and B, that he plays for a National League organization when he is clearly an American League player. You would agree?
Hustle, being in shape, those things don't seem to be incredibly important to Yasmani. He's a butcher in the field, and he makes a lot of money. Yeah, those are the problems with the Yasmani Tomas.
Well, with that recent production and couple that with the fact the Diamondbacks are struggling offensively again. Two more runs last night. They lost their four straight to the Padres, and they're trying to avoid a sweep at Petco today. The question comes up, what do you do to shake things up? Mike Hazen, the general manager, was on with Doug and Wolf, and I believe it was Doug who asked him about the Yasmani Tomas question. Now, I completely dismissed this as a possibility earlier. I just think Yasmani Tomas, to me, is the definition of languishing in the minor leagues as a victim of the contract that the previous regime signed him to. But they asked him, is it possible that Yasmani Tomas has done enough to get back up to the big club? Here was Mike Hazen's answer.
He is tearing the cover off the ball, clearly, just from a makeup standpoint that you asked. The guy, he's a stud. He's a great kid. He's the best. I think the challenge for us is, you know, if people are still healthy, it's a challenge getting him onto our team on our field right now. If David, Adam, and Walker, who a week ago we were all talking about as, you know, what we were, where do you play him on an everyday basis? And I think, could you call him up as a pinch hitter? Of course you could. I don't think a lot of these games are coming down to a pinch hit. I think a lot of them are coming down to, like we talked about at the very beginning, you know, we need to put more offensive pressure innings 1-7 on the opposing starting pitcher.
I think he brings up a lot of great points there. And you look at the schedule, okay, there's interleague play is kind of peppered into the schedule. The next time the Diamondbacks will play in an American League ballpark is not until June 7th, 8th, and 9th when they are in Toronto. So they still have today against San Diego, three against the Giants, four against the Rockies, home for three against the Mets, home for three against the Dodgers before they hit the road again.
Yeah.
So I still think it's a very minute possibility this could happen, but let's say five days down the road, if these struggles continue, Mike Hazen was talked about, hey, you don't want to act too rashly, but the Dodgers are 15 games above 500 and seem to be running away with the division, and these other teams that you're in a battle for the wild card are continuing to play well. You don't have a lot of time to figure things out.
No. That applies to Zach Godley. It applies to the offense. You really don't. If this season digresses to your 15 games under 500, then do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Develop whoever you want. Make whatever decisions you want. It doesn't matter in terms of the pursuit of the playoffs. But I just think, and I don't know Yasmani that well, but I do know that Yasmani, I'm sure, has come to the realization that he is not this current regime's cup of tea.
Yeah.
Or their guy.
Although Mike Hazen even said about his makeup and how he is in the clubhouse, he said he's the best.
Okay. I would hope on some level Yasmani Tomas is really tired of playing minor league baseball.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, when you're making that kind of money, maybe you don't care. But I would hope he would care. And if that's the case, you would think that given a lifeline, given another chance, would be worth something to him.
Yeah. Here's Mike Hazen as well on the timing and, what a possible pitfall could be if they do go down that road and bring Yasmani Tomas back to the big club.
I think that's a little bit of a conundrum. Yes, we could. Could we fit him on the roster? Of course we could, in a lot of ways. It's just, what's the position you're going to replace there to get him onto the field? Having him on the roster and not playing him, you're in the same box you're in right now. If you had a spot to play him, that'd be a different conversation.
Yeah, I think all of those things, and that's what's plagued Yasmani Tomas during his career with the Diamondbacks. Is he a third baseman? Is he an outfielder? He's played a lot of first base at Reno. Christian Walker has kind of slumped.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that early season magic that he had has worn off. I'll be honest with you, though. If I am the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I'm getting a little worried about this lack of production, Yasmani Tomas isn't even the first guy from the Reno roster I'm looking at. I'm looking at Kevin Crone. It's already easier. He's on the 40-man roster. You wouldn't have to create a roster spot for him. Yasmani Tomas is not on the 40-man roster.
I know. Which tells you how buried he has been,
mm-hmm.
or is, or mm-hmm. was. Okay, yeah, I get that, but I don't know. I want to believe that Yasmani Tomas, I mean, he's got a potent bat. He's got other issues, but I want to believe that if you give him the shot, he's going to view it as, okay, I better make this right, where a guy like Kevin Crone is going to, okay, this is great. He'll look at it as the first of many,
mm-hmm.
if you will. That's why the Yasmani Tomas thing appeals to me, and maybe I'm way wrong. Maybe he doesn't have that mentality. Again, if you make $13 million a year playing minor league baseball, how much motivation do you have?
I don't know.
It's a great question.
It's not like his production has slipped, though. It is a conundrum was the word that Mike Hazen used. I think that's a pretty good word.
Could you not trade him to an American League team after a four home run game in the minors?
It doesn't change the fact that he's got $16 million coming to him.
It's a good point. It's a real good point.
Wow. Let me weigh these. Four home runs in one game? Or that.
It's only $4 million per home run.
Yeah, it's all right. Come on. What a deal.
What a bargain. D-backs and Padres series finale today from Petco. 12:40. It's over on ESPN 620 AM. We'll have D-backs on deck coming up at 11:45. Coming up next, lots of questions about Kevin Durant's future, both for the NBA Finals and for next season and beyond. We'll get into some of the possibilities next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.